Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in Radio DMG may or may not be the views and opinions of the DMGI's family of sites. All music used in this podcast is the property of whoever made it, and no copyright infringement is intended. God bless this albatross, and hold on tight for the awesome you're about to receive.
He's got the beta king. Sega!
Welcome to Radio DMG Episode 9. I am your host, Philip Wesley, and you may have guessed, that we are going for, well, through all sorts of neat growing pains. Today's opening theme is from the newly released Speed of Sound OC Remix album. It's a bunch of remix Sonic the Hedgehog 1 tunes from OC Remix. Check the show notes for the appropriate link to the awesome. Now, we're also doing a little bit of format changes, and I want to apologize in advance because I still have kind of a cold, so yeah, that type of thing. But today's show will consist of some quick, very quick, newsity, and then a long interview with Lynn Hardy, the author of the book series called The Prophecy of the Flame. The full cast audio version of the first book is coming very soon, and I hope this helps get fans of the series hyped for the very awesome audiobook. I know many people will want more detailed show notes during this one, because we do name a lot of different authors, and I would love to go through and get all the links and Wikipedia entries for the show. However, most people do not listen to the show glued to their computers. We put it on our iPods, or on our iPads, or on our Google Android-y phone thingies, or on our PlayStation Portables, or on our Nintendo DS, 3DS, whatever, or on, you know, all sorts of things. So we're not really glued to the TV reading the show notes along with the podcast. But yeah, I would love to do that, but there's a lot of it in here, so just bear with me. Or my suggestion, if you miss something the first time you listen to it, or you wanted to check something, why not listen to it again? Yes, multiple listenings. Do it. Also, rate us on iTunes, subscribe to us, etc., etc. So, let's get into the 100% newsity part of this program after this very sweet acoustic thing that I found on the internet. Definitely check out the show notes, because the video where that is from is pretty interesting. That entire body of music was played by literally beating the daylights out of a Game Boy, one of the old original brick Game Boys, like running your fingernails up the side or something, or moving the power adapt. It's really neat, and it's in the links, and it's really cool. And I thought I'd put it in there because you had to hear it. It's awesome. And yes, there's coughing. But we're going to go ahead and put out the newsity theme and come right back with the newsity in just a moment. Yeah, I know. We bring the heat, but we still got a cold. First, an apology for the long delay between this episode and the last episode. The latest newsity is pretty great, but short. Release dates for 3DS games and DS games were confirmed. There's going to be a brand new Kirby game this year, out this winter, or rather fall, and you can control up to 10 different Kirbys all at once. On the 3DS side of things, The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, 3D will be released June 19th. They went ahead and confirmed it, which is great. And Cave Story 3D will be June 28th. Star Fox 64 3D will be July 17th. Resident Evil Mercenaries is in July as well. And Mario Kart looks like it might be in August. The eShop in May, of course. And Dead or Alive Dimensions in May as well. Should be pretty good. Just thought I might want to brighten up your day with that little piece of news. And the Pokemon Global Link Dream World stuff is up. So if you have Pokemon Black or White, you can now go to your Sea Gear and turn that on and enter a world of Fennel scornfully staring at you for hours on end. It's up, but it's slow. My suggestion, maybe we should wait for that Pokemon fad to fade away a little bit before you try it out. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, that's pretty much it on the news. There will be more detailed news when I collect more detailed news and put it into an episode. But for right now, I mean, come on. It's, yeah, we've been delayed. But eh. A new episode will be up soon. Remember, this Friday, More Life and Puzzle. We're coming now into the pixelated ones, which are the better comics, if you ask me. And let's go ahead and start our feature. I'm going to go ahead and play the feature theme. And sit tight. Grab some popcorn or some type of snack. Maybe some tissues. I don't know. And enjoy. See you on the other side. Hello and welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, and I'm here with
Lynn Hardy, author of Prophecy of the Flame.
Book one and book two.
Yes.
Of Prophecy of the Flame. So, would you like to tell us a little bit about your book series?
I sure will. I would love to. Prophecy of the Flame is about five people pretending to defend a hotel to win a free weekend. A sorcerer sees them and zaps them into a world of magic. In the transfer, they're changed into their characters. One guy gets to be an elf, another guy turns into a dwarf, and the main character is a housewife who has no idea about gaming. She becomes the most powerful sorceress on the planet.
So it's kind of like LARPing gets real, or so like shows like Escaflowne or other types of anime and manga, right?
Exactly. They're using their D&D characters to LARP, and whatever they had on their D&D stats becomes their life, and all of a sudden their dreams are reality.
So did you write any books before this one?
Actually, these are my first two.
Your first two books?
My first two books, although book one has become number one on Amazon Kindle as of fall of last year.
Oh, that's not bad.
Thank you. And the audiobook, based on book one, it's a full cast audiobook, will be released next month. Right now, we're doing a pre-sale. If you hurry, you can get it for half price at the website, lynnhardy.com.
Yeah, we also got to interview some of the people who are in that one, like Lisa Wilkerson and Warkey and, yes.
Preston,
sorry. His last name, I was going to say, is it Preston?
Preston Cowley.
Preston.
We also have Michael Coleman, mm-hmm. and he plays in some Dragon Ball Z. Also, Adrian Petru, who is Iron Man, the voice of Iron Man on the cartoons. They were not at the con, so I will let you, I guess, know about them now.
Oh, yeah.
And let's see, Sunny Strait also has a cameo. It's a little-known fact, but we will be running a competition the first 6 months that the audiobook is out. Anybody who can guess which spot Sunny cameos will have a chance to win a first edition, no longer available for purchase, of Prophecy of the Flame, the first edition, autographed by the author. You could also guess the extra roles that Warkey does and the extra roles that Liesl does to get an entry for this drawing.
Although, if you did listen to some of our old other broadcasts, you might have kind of a hint, although we might go back and edit some of those so you don't have a hint.
Oh, no. No, you can't edit it. You got to give your listeners a heads up.
Oh,
let
I guess
have
so.
A leg in.
Yeah, definitely. So, what drove you to write Prophecy of the Flame?
You know, I actually dropped out of college. I was a journalism major, and okay, this my age is showing, but this was back before Word was out in mass, in force. And they told me that I couldn't catch my own typos, so I should drop my journalism degree. And I did. I dropped a college altogether. There wasn't much for me after that. But later in life, I had written an autobiography working through some counseling, and my counselor told me, you know, you have this way of bringing a story to life. I've asked all my clients to write this for the last 20 years, and this is the first time I want to sit down with a cup of tea and see what happens next in your life. So I had an amazing set of dreams, and I decided, you know what? I'm going to write it. And I began the journey of a writer.
The long and arduous journey of a writer. So how is that working so far? Number one Amazon Kindle bestseller.
In two separate categories, yes. Both in science fiction, epic, and don't be scared, romance. Yeah, you know, I will tell you guys a secret. There is a subtitle to these books that I removed from the cover. They were originally called Love's Dawning, Love's Price. Book three will be Love's Journey, debuting this summer. Love's Destiny and Love's Fate. My male readers who love the book said having that on the cover made it seem like a romance novel. And it isn't, so please take it off. So I did. I removed Love's Dawning. It is no longer part of the cover.
So you kind of broke dawn on that one, huh?
I did.
Love's Breaking Dawn. Love vampires and werewolves included.
I did. I'm trying to break out of that mold.
Ah, yeah.
So the romance comes in. The main character leaves her husband at home. And there's a couple of handsome princes about who think they must wed her, if not bed her, in order to fulfill the prophecy of the flame.
Is this PG or PG-13?
You know, it
just
is
a
fully teen-rated novel. That first edition I'm talking about giving away, yeah, it had a really steamy scene in it. One that I'm told made grown women perspire. But with so many teens buying my book, I deleted it for the second edition.
Oh, so that makes it even more rare.
Yes.
And that's obviously not in the in the audiobook version.
That's correct.
Mm.
So it has been deleted completely from all future productions of Prophecy of the Flame. I'm trying to protect the innocence of our youth.
The youth.
Yeah, the youth. Yes. So if you would like to enter for that drawing, just go to lynnhardy.com. L-Y-N-N, Hardy, like the Hardy Boys, HARDY.com, and order or pre-order a book for half price, or pick one up later. You have 6 months to listen to it and to find those parts and enter the contest.
So, how many conventions have you gone to, anime conventions?
Actually, amazingly enough, this is my third one.
Third one?
Yes. I didn't know anime existed until Worky, T. Chocobo, invited me to one. I was like, anime? Anime convention? What's that? You know...
So are you terrified adequately?
You know, I used to attend sci-fi and fantasy conventions. I'm a Star Trek geek from way back. And I thought that was my home. But the first time I attended an anime convention, I knew I had found my true home. You know, anime unleashes the imagination like no other force on earth. And the people are kind and accepting and compassionate. It is just a beautiful, beautiful world. And I'm just sorry I only get to enter it for weekends here and there.
So what was your first anime convention?
That was Banzai in Salt Lake City, October of last year. Followed shortly by Snafu in Reno.
So how was the one in Reno?
You know, I was told it was exceptional for a first-time con. They had over 700 people attend their first con. They worked their way through each and every problem, handling it efficiently.
Any fire alarms?
No fire alarms. But registration was set back by about 3 hours. You know, for a first-time con, I'm assuming that's pretty good.
It's pretty good for a con that's been around for like a decade.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing, amazing time. It was a huge turnout. People were so energetic and so enthusiastic at everything. It was just really cool.
So what anime conventions are you going to attend after Anime Wasabi?
Well, it just so happens I received an invite back to Wasabi next year. We'll be doing a new panel. And that's a cosplay based on Prophecy of the Flame. Come as your favorite Prophecy of the Flame character. The closest cosplay will win a first edition and a second edition and book two as well. So you can have the complete story of the Crusaders of the Light who you are portraying. And then there are going to be some Dungeons and Dragons games they've started. They've invited me to my first D&D game and some panels on writing. Then I've also attending Banzai again and Snafu, and I'm currently working on several other invitations, so you'll have to check the website.
Okay. So so it's only going to be two books, or is this a trilogy or so? How many?
Book three comes out this summer. It launches with a brand new set of Crusaders. Book four and five will follow every summer. So the prophecy will be concluded in book five.
So five books, a quintuplet of titles.
Yes, yes, and they're already fully planned out, although I think book five will be between 600 and 1,000 pages, depending on how much I expand the stories to get full closure.
A lot of authors have a tendency to base some of their characters on themselves or people they know. Is there anybody in the Prophecy of Flame that you've based on people you know or have met? Many villains or heroes or heroines in that?
Aren't we all required to put that nice little paragraph in the front of our books? Here, let me read it to you as I open to the copyright page. Let's see, it says, characters in this book are fictitious. Any resemblance to persons living or dead are strictly coincidental.
Ah.
With that clause in mind, perhaps.
Perhaps.
Be careful which author you run into. A bad encounter might lead you to be named for a villain, while a good one will be a sexy heroine. I will tell you, in book three, the villain is actually named for a friend.
Ah.
And he said he loves to play villains in games. And his name was beautiful, and it fit the storyline wonderfully. So my villain is named after a friend with his permission.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
And, as long as it's like, well, if I die in this book, make it a good one, you know.
Yes.
Bury me with my money.
Exactly. So there are a few times when I do get permission to use characters. My husband's family, there are a few characters named after them. I usually pick... some feature that represents them so I can remember them more accurately. Say there's an aunt with dark hair and a full voluptuous figure, but she's older now, so it's a little heavier. And so I name a maid after her. Say, perhaps, you know, I would name a maid after her and give her those attributes. So many times I'll pick out certain attributes and name a character after them. Oh, yeah. May I continue?
Oh, sure. Go for it.
In book three, mm-hmm. the character, Gworky, debuts. He is the tavern owner of the Chocobo Inn.
Are you able to call it Chocobo? Square Enix won't get too mad?
Chocobo Inn.
Okay.
Yes, and his parents raised these oversized chickens in the far, far west, breeding for that fabled gold one that would lend them no end of fame and fortune.
I don't know where that could have come from at all.
Oh, it was beautifully. It lends itself to the story wonderfully. I love his character. Okay, let's just say we've been talking to some actors that Gworky is friends with. There might be somebody with the last name of, well, let's say Yankovic, who may do his part. Anybody
knows.
Familiar with that?
Knows. No. Probably somebody. Yeah. So a lot of authors have done that before. I mean, Ayn Rand used to write all her stuff herself into all of her books. And she used to write all of her, like, people she knew or other people she didn't like into her books.
But did she admit it publicly?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, which is pretty funny.
How did she keep from being sued?
She wrote Atlas Shrugged. Those people who were like, oh, you're making fun of me here, they probably didn't read through it.
Yes.
It is like that thick, pretty much.
But my problem is, these books were based on a set of dreams. So many people do pick me out as the main character. Unfortunately, I've been told many times that the main character seems arrogant. And I'm like...
No. All good trailblazers have to have a tendency where people will view them as that. Because, you know, when you're going forward, there will always be people following you or behind you. So, you know, when you're the lead dog, unless you're lead dog, the... view never changes.
Oh,
no fear things, yeah.
Well, thank you. That helps because, you know, I was like, I based this character a little bit on my personality, has a few personality traits, and I'm like, I had three remarks saying that she seemed a little bit arrogant, and I was like...
It's confident is the word.
Yes.
Confidence, the better word for that. Some people tend to mistake arrogance for arrogance with confidence and vice versa.
And being the most powerful sorceress on the planet, how could she not be?
You have to be confident at that point, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that makes me think of a little bit like Slayers with Lena Inverse. It's another that's an anime where the main character in there is like a really, really mighty sorceress, but she's kind of a little bit... she's single-minded when it comes to one thing, food. Oddly enough, but yeah, that's bringing it back to anime. What shows have you seen so far?
You know, I haven't done anime for many years. I left off in my college days. I'm told that Robotech is still considered anime.
Oh yeah, it is.
It is one of my favorite from way back. I've seen every episode of Robotech, and they also say Thundercats. Has an anime influence, is actually created in Japan.
Yeah, it is created in Japan, yeah. So with Robotech, who is your favorite character?
You know,
start with Rick and end with Hunter.
You know, it has been so long since I've seen an episode. It's probably been 15 years, so I will have to pass. I just remember that was one. I was there back before they recorded them every day for that show. And lately, I've watched Avatar.
Oh, yeah, Avatar The Last Airbender. What do you think so far of it?
You know, I think it has an amazing depth for the show. The characters, the way they grow, it is very fun. It really brings them to life more than I ever thought possible. You know, like I said, it's been a while since I've done anime, and I believe it's grown in the
quite a bit. There are some
years.
Great shows out there. I would definitely recommend, like I mentioned, Slayers. That's a pretty good one. A lot of people start with that.
I will have to start with that one next.
That one or Rune Soldier or Record of Lotus War, especially if you like fantasy.
Yes.
Record of Lotus War is really good. It's a little hard to get a hold of, but you can find places which will stream it online legitimately.
Oh.
And it's worth checking out.
I will have to try that.
And Media Blasters, they were here and they'll be putting it out again on DVD soon.
And
so.
I have two beautiful daughters, and I hope soon to attend a convention with them. They are huge Pokemon fans.
Oh, there's a lot of that here.
Did you notice? I did notice. And every time I heard that Pokemon, I was like, oh, my daughter would just scream. She would be, what do they call it?
A Pokemaniac, I guess?
Yeah, yes.
Or a person who goes around like, as people cosplay as a lot of their characters. It's become kind of a bit of a phenomenon, which transcends a lot of age. So, when you're making your books, now I know that you said you were editing a little bit toward teens, mm-hmm. but would you say that they're more of a, they have a universal theme for more of a wide audience?
Yes, actually, I originally wrote these books to reach the crowd that liked Harry Potter, but was not sure where to go for fantasy after that. It introduces fantasy very gently. All the words that are distinct to fantasy are not in my book. It's made to be from the perspective of an unknown, to bring women into the world of fantasy, and I believe into the world of anime for the things that she accomplishes.
Oh yeah, it's kind of a stepping stone, if you will.
Yes.
So what other fantasy books do you read? Aside from, like you mentioned, Star Trek stuff.
I absolutely love Melanie Ron. She was one of my favorites. I've read Tad Williams, along with Robert Jordan.
Wheel of Time's excellent.
Yes, yes. And The Sword of Truth, Terry Goodkind. One of my favorite ones that is not as well known is L.E. Modisett Jr. He writes the series of Recluse, and he does it brilliantly. They call it sci-fi in disguise, some people, but I still love it. And I had the privilege of meeting him last summer. We did a science fiction convention together, and he took one of my books home, book one, and he emailed me and said, very enjoyable and fun.
Oh, yep. And it's right on the cover too.
Yeah, and I emailed him back and I said, Lee, can I use this on the front of my book? And of course he said yes, and so now printed on the front of my book from one of my favorite, all-time favorite authors is a quote, and I am just so thrilled and so touched by that. So that has been an honor of my life.
So aside from your dream influence, what books would you say have influenced that? Like, did you read any like early Tolkien or H.P. Lovecraft or L.M. Montgomery?
It's a funny thing. Any of you ever read Terry Goodkind?
No.
I actually read Terry Goodkind long before I ever read Lord of the Rings. And I heard over and over, oh yeah, you know, he's stolen this from Tolkien. And I was like,
stealing, it's an homage.
You know, and I always thought, huh, what are they talking about? You know, isn't that illegal? So I finally got a hold of Tolkien years later. And I went, oh my gosh, here they are at the mountain. Oh my gosh, there's a monster in the lake. And, you know, oh gosh, the guy dies in the mountain. So yes, you know, I kind of got where they were going with that. But Terry Brooks was one of my early favorites as a teen. That was a question, right?
Yeah, it was like, which stuff, you know.
Oh, Mercedes Lackey.
Mercedes Lackey. I'm not familiar with this author.
She writes quite a large variety, but she's known for groundbreaking new ideas. Like, one of her series had gay characters, male characters that were gay, and they were the main characters of the book. And that was a trilogy that she wrote about, oh gosh, I think it was published in the early 90s. And that was a beautiful series. And she did many, many series like that. And she was one of my favorites, along with Anne McCaffrey. I have read almost every fantasy novel that was published before 1991. I would read about 10 novels a week.
Any Brian Aldiss?
Name a title.
Song of the Silencer.
No.
Or Super Toys Never Die.
No. But I did read, who does all the puns?
That would be...
Pierce Anthony.
I was going to say Terry Pratchett.
Yes.
Discworld.
Yes, yes. He did as well, and so did Terry... Now that's gone.
Yeah, it's like, whoop.
Whoop, yep, there it goes. It's been a long con. It's Sunday night. Everything's done. We've had closing ceremonies. It's been a wonderful weekend. I hope many of you were there. I hope to see many more of you next year.
Oh, yeah. So what was your favorite part of this convention so far?
My favorite part, many people say their favorite part is the cosplay, you know, because seeing all the fabulous costumes, I mean, there are, everywhere you look, there's a new costume, a new design, and just brilliantly done. But for me, it goes deeper than that. It was the acceptance, the openness, and the kindness with which everyone treated everyone else. You know, if the rest of the world behaved this way, we would have world peace. You know,
unless somebody glumped somebody through a fire door or something, right?
Yeah, possibly. That might set things up a bit. But, you know, for the most part, they're kind-hearted, great people, and it's just a wonderful place to be. And that is what I love the most, are the people that make up the anime.
So, when you sit down to write, do you write out like a... I'm going to ask you a bit about your writing technique. What programs do you use on the computer? Do you type it out, or do you... do you write notes or timelines by hand?
Well, okay, I'm a word girl first, and I guess I have this gift. My family, many of them are genius IQ, you know, photographic memory, stuff like that. I didn't get any of that. What I got was photographic dream memory. So I remember my dreams really, really well, and I remember storylines extremely well. So I actually just plan them out in my head. I once tried to write an outline before I wrote a book. This was not my first attempt. It was earlier I attempted a book, and I tried the outline first. It put me to sleep. I was so dry and boring. So basically, I just sit down and I write. I put myself into the story, and I describe it from there. And it just flows out. I have no problem remembering what comes next and where it should go. Running into dead ends, it's planned out and it happens.
To get into the zone, do you use any kind of music, or do you have to have absolute silence? Have everyone put out the cat, that type of thing.
Yeah, there's one. I can't remember what they called it. Blake was telling me about this personality type that just has tunnel vision, and they said a lot of good artists and actors have this ability. And
unfortunately, it's good for artists, not for drivers.
Yeah, exactly. And I get that tunnel vision. I sit down at the computer and nothing. I hear nothing else. I see nothing else. My children have to ask me two or three times before I hear their voice. I am just there in another world and recording what I see. Atmosphere doesn't matter. I ride in the car when we drive across
country.
Hopefully
not while driving, right? Yeah. Like, oh, type.
That would be bad. I think that would actually cause you, what, several texting while driving fees? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they'd slap you with 10. I don't know. So, no, I haven't...
Per page.
But, okay, when I was writing book one, I believe, I was working at the time, full-time. So I had my laptop with me, and I would set it up in the car seat next to me, and every time I stopped at a light, I would type on the sentence.
Should you be telling me this?
I was stopped at a red light.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I was waiting for the next one. I'd carry it into the doctor's appointment. While I waited for a doctor's appointment, I would be typing away. So I did do a little bit from the driver's seat.
Ah, living on the edge.
Living on the edge always.
So, how would you feel that writing and becoming a successful author has helped you with like your personal life or your everyday life? How has this helped you? Does it help you relax? Does it?
You know, I really didn't think about it much, but my mom, of all people, tells me that through the writing of this book, she saw me sit down and do this book, and I would send her chapter at a time. She was my first reader. She said that she saw me grow in confidence and strength. She said she saw me bloom into the person she always knew I was inside. Until then, I was shy and awkward and not very self-confident at all. So in a way, the character Reba helped me grow into the person I have become. Realizing her strength helped me realize my own.
Yeah. Is she's not in any way really named after like Reba McEntire, is she?
No.
Okay.
The main character, I had a hard time coming up with a name. The main character has to have four different names between all the books. So she is Rebecca on Earth. When she gets to this new world, it's a form of her name, Reba. When she flashes back to childhood, it's Becky. And then in book two, pretty important scene, she goes by Becca. So she had to have four different versions of this name. And this was one I was familiar with, and so that's where it came from.
Is there any non-spoiler significance to having four names on this?
As I said, yes.
Just stylistically.
Yes, it's very important that she has more than one name for several purposes. Also, she has to have an identical twin name that matches and is kind of close to it. So I did know some twins close to these names, and that's where I chose them from.
That's not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
So I noticed something at your booth. A lot of the sales are going toward a charity group. Could you tell us a little bit more about them?
Well, I have two passions. One is writing. That's something that I love to do and I enjoy so much. But my other passion runs a little bit deeper. When I was a small teenager, not a small child, I was a teenager, my dad lost his job and we were on the verge of being homeless. We lived in some places that I had nightmares about for years afterwards, and, you know, and lived with family, and it was a really rough time in life. And with the recession, I've noticed an increase in homeless families with children. And it just tears my heart apart to know that there are children in this country that go home to a car or a shelter and they do not have a bed to call their own. So I began a 501c3 charity called Agape Assistance. I always promised myself when I was a famous writer someday, when I was rich and famous, I would have a charity to help out homeless families with children. Well, they can't wait any longer. And I'm not a New York Times bestseller. My books are not nationwide on shelf to shelf. I do it through Amazon and my homepage. But they can't wait any longer. My kids have a warm bed and they don't. So I give 100% of the proceeds from book one to Agape Assistance, a 501c3 charity that provides food and shelter to homeless families with children.
Is there a website for Agape Assistance?
Yes, it's agapeassistance.org, A-G-A-P-E. Assistance, assistance.org. And that 100% of the audiobook also goes to this association. When I get a movie deal, that will also go to Agape Assistance. Everything from book one goes to this charity. That's why the voice actors jumped online.
Are you working on a screenplay for the first one currently?
I am, actually. I'm hoping to contract a screenwriter right now. We have three directors requesting the screenplay for Agape or for Prophecy of the Flame. They want to look at it and they want to be presented with it. Unfortunately, I don't have it written. And writing a screenplay is a talent, it is a skill, and I want it done right. And so I will not do it myself. I'm currently in the interviewing process, working to get a screenplay writer who will write the screenplay for me.
Are there any tips you could give to young writers who may be starting out on their own books or so? Any little tips or so they can steal from you?
I can. You know, I do a lot of panels on writing, so I will try and keep it brief, my hour-long panels. The first tip is to read. The more you read in the genre you want to write, the better you are going to write, the better the knowledge pool you're going to have to draw from on styles, plots, techniques. So if you want to write for a newspaper, you need to read newspapers, and not just one, you need to read several different types of newspapers. If you want to write in magazines, fashion magazines, read those. Same with fantasy or science fiction, read in your genre.
So like, if you want to write mystery or crime drama, read Raymond Chandler, that type of thing.
Exactly, there you go. And the other thing is you need schooling. You need basic skills. When I dropped out of college, don't think, oh, I don't have to go to school. She didn't. I actually took the basic grammar class. I scored 100%, well, it was 99% in the class. So my grammar was flawless, but spelling, well, that can be helped nowadays. But not everyone can do it the way I did. Go to school. Let them help you. Let them teach you and guide you. So take those classes. Online classes, online forums are a great place. You can post a chapter at a time. People will review it and critique it.
Sometimes too harshly.
Sometimes, right? Yes. I have a rule of thumb for
online
harsh
criticism.
Critiques. Yes. If you hear it once, you can kind of shrug it off. If you hear it twice, you might want to peruse that little bit, you know, a little bit more. If you hear it three times, it's something you need to attend to. After the third time, that means that whatever you're doing is not working for your reader. and you need to look at your technique.
So, how would you describe your writing technique, like in your book?
You know, that is a great question. I'm glad you asked. I, at this wonderful con, I actually discovered something, and it has put my heart at peace. I have a lot of people when I go out, even from this convention, they said they picked up the book and they love it, and they emailed me already, and the convention's not even over yet. So I have a lot of fan mail, but I also get people who say, oh, this is garbage, it should never be written. And I'm like, so I'm kind of like, gosh, you know, is it good, is it not? You know, I get one out of every 20, you know, is bad. So I was talking to someone who was a literary, you know, he's majored in English and literature, and so he's, you know, he's very knowledgeable on the subject. And he read the first few chapters of my book, and he says, you know, I've noticed your style is very casual. It doesn't have those words we look for in fantasy, those words that nobody but a fantasy reader will understand. And he says, you know, it comes off as very, what was the word he used? Not sophisticated. You know, it's very average level for the average person to be able to pick up and understand what is being said.
So you're not elitist.
That's right.
Which is, so you're more of a, you could say it's an everyman style or a common.
Exactly. Common tongue. Yes.
Commoner. Yeah.
The common tongue of this world is what I speak. And I don't go into a lot of flowery speech. Yeah, that rhymed. That was weird.
Yes.
So there's not a lot of that in the book. It's just you and I talking, you and I conversing. You're not going to have to pull out your dictionary too often. If there is a word that I use that is not general to the English language, I list it in the glossary. How many of you know what a rapier is?
Well, it's a sword.
But how many housewives?
It's a sword. Yeah, they're looking at that like, I thought I saw something on this in ABC last night.
Exactly. So you know, if I use a word like that, I put it in the glossary. So somebody can look it up if they need to. And I don't use them very often. I use them sparingly so that those who liked Harry Potter can take the next step into fantasy.
Or like there could be a bit of an overlap between people who also like Twilight, which is also written in a lot of people critique it because it's written in common tongue.
Right.
But she does so because that's how you reach the widest audience.
Exactly.
And that's how you gain a foothold in that. Where do you think your books will be in the next 10 years?
Huh. Well, I don't know if you heard from Worky, but he gave me one of my quotes that I use on my flyers. He said that he thinks it's going to be bigger than Twilight. He actually said that on Amazon review. My God, talk about hate mail. You never want to say that in public. But I think that it has a wide appeal, much wider than I anticipated, much wider than I planned on. So I think that it will be in the movies in the next couple of years, and I hope all around the world in the next few years. And I think that I've got that arrogance of Reba coming out of me because...
That's fine.
Because it's not Shakespeare, but I think it speaks to the common heart and the common soul of man and woman alike, child and adult.
Have you looked into getting it translated yet into, like, say, Spanish? That's a big one you should try and get translated into first.
I've actually been requested by some readers who are Spanish who've read it and want to know if I will publish in their language. But I haven't looked into that yet. Being self-published, time...
It's a little tricky.
It's a little more tricky in time and connection, so I'm sure I will get there. People ask me if I would like to be picked up by a mainstream publisher because of some attention I'm getting and whatnot. And at this point, I'm not really sure. If a mainstream publisher offered me a contract, it would have to be a good one with some serious benefits to let go of the control I now have.
Because it's your creation.
Exactly, and I seem to be doing okay on my own. For a new author, they very rarely do any kind of advertisement. They just basically throw it up on the shelf and hope it flies. You know, if I'm going to give them the majority of my profits, you know, I'm going to give them 98% of my profits, then I want to see a little something more for it because I've proven that I can do it on my own. And I would like to see more from them than they give the typical author. Authors beware.
So, how did you feel after completing your first book?
You know, it was probably the first major project I've ever completed in my life. I found my home, I found my joy, and I can't stop. And it was a great feeling, especially when I got the first book in hand. I wasn't there. I was actually in Israel on a Holy Land tour, and my husband called me on the phone, and he said, yeah, I got your book in the mail. I FedExed, you know, the first, what is it called, copy that you just look at, galley copy.
Oh, galley copy, yes.
Yeah, to us to, for approval, and he's like, yeah, I got it, and he said, it's a real book. Oh my gosh, I can't believe this. You know, he was so excited. It was so great to have that support. And he gave a copy to every single person we knew. So much for the first printing.
So much for the profits of the first printing.
Exactly, when like, you give away 100 copies.
Yeah, that has a tendency to eat into profits.
Yeah, but actually, in my, if you would like to discuss profits, in the first copy of the first printing of my book, the first 7 months, I made more than most authors make for their first contract with a publishing company. So it took me 7 months to
and
get
not
there.
Bad.
Yeah.
We won't go into details or numbers there because the point of the interview is to talk about you and your book.
Exactly.
Not the money.
Exactly. But I'm just wanting to encourage other authors out there that the submission process to get noticed by big publishers can be difficult and can be almost nearly impossible. I've been told it's like winning the lottery to get what they feel the market is right at this time, you know, what they're feeling. And
they've got a bunch of people in suits in a place out somewhere in California in a high rise to sit there and go, oh, I don't know about the color of the cover here.
Yeah. And so I want to encourage them that you can do it yourself, that you can, you know, overcome the obstacle of the publishing house. And it just so happens we're launching Resilient Publishing. I've been asked to take submissions. I put together a team of submission editors to help you do it yourself.
Resilient Publishing?
Yeah, that's the name I created for my publishing company. As a self-published author, you have to be very resilient. You're gonna get a couple of tomatoes chucked with the roses. Thrown at you, so you're going to have to learn to wipe yourself off and keep going. And I want to help those out there who have a good quality product reach their audience. So that is my goal of Resilient Publishing. It's basically trying to put you with the right people and the right knowledge so you can get the attention to your work and get out there like you want to.
So do you have a website for Resilient Publishing yet?
It will be resilientpublishing.com. We aren't launching until next month. It has been put on hold for several months due to the audiobook. Much more time consuming. A full cast audiobook is kind of like directing a movie. You have a cast load of actors and you're, you know, fitting roles, and it was quite a lot more challenging than I had expected. I co-directed it.
So, who was your director for the audiobook?
His name is John Kazan, and he has a studio in Boise. He donated not only his studio, but his directorial experience in this. And he was awesome. He was able to coach the voice actors, a lot of them were new. And so he spent a lot of time helping them find the character and find the voice, putting into words what I was expressing. So I would express to him what I wanted, and he would get it done.
So, when are you looking to make the audiobook for book two?
That all depends on you, the listeners. How well you blog about it, how well you talk about it, and how many we sell. As soon as we have the funds from book one to create book two, we will. The way that works is 100% goes to Agape Assistance, but we did invest quite a bit on other things, and so a percentage will go back to reimbursing those expenses of creating the first book. And the way we have it budgeted, after a while, we should have enough to start book two. I think it was 1,000 copies that we need to sell.
So 1,000 copies.
1,000 copies.
Not too bad. That's not much.
No, it's not. So if you like the audiobook, you like the full cast, every character having their own unique voice, and you want more, Tell your friends where they can get it, and tell your friends about it. And as soon as we get to that earmark, we are ready to launch book two. The actors are ready to continue their roles. By the end of book two, you'll find out which crusaders live and which ones give their life for this magical world, and which ones return home and which ones stay in the kingdom of Cuthbert. So it winds up the story for this group, and all the actors are on board for book two.
So this one here is a little bit of a personal question, because one thing I've noticed about a lot of anime convention goers is that they're very, very open and outgoing here at conventions, but when they get back to their schools, back to their communities, back to their day-to-day jobs, they're very shy or withdrawn. What type of suggestions or so would you have for them to help them get past that, being shy and withdrawn in a normal setting?
I had an experience earlier in life, I kind of do maybe use it in the book, but where I failed to approach someone because I was too shy. And I spent many years dreaming of this person. And then when I did finally approach them, I returned to the city which I had moved from. And I finally did. I'm like, next time I see them, I'm going up to them, I'm saying hi. You know, that's all there is to it. I found out that it wasn't worth dreaming about, you know, that I had wasted all those years. And so from that point on, I thought, you know, what is the worst that can happen? They can say no. You know, they can say, I don't feel like talking to you, you know? What is the worst, absolute worst that can happen? Not that much. You know, be bold, step forward, you know, let people see who you are. And otherwise, you'll never know. And not knowing can be the worst thing in the world.
And knowing is half the battle.
I might use that in the book, yes.
Oh, it's from G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Well, it's made, what, how many movies? I've seen it in like 3 movies in the last 4
definitely.
Years. So I didn't feel bad using that one. After all, she gets plagiarize everything on this magical world. It's all new to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like sit there and go, well, 47 years ago when I was, that type of thing.
Yes, yes, she does. United we stand and divided we fall. She gets to take from the best. The other thing that is unique to this magical world, if you're interested, is the system of magic. Because she comes from the 21st century and she doesn't know the regular rules, she gets away with quite a bit more, which will come to bite her in the butt later in the series. But
dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, but she casts spells like, instead of lightning and featherfall, normal fantasy spells, she will do Klingon cloak and laser fire. Her strength spell is Conan, and her flight spell is Superman. So I get to have a lot of fun mixing in the 21st century in the world of Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm. So have you thought about going into other genres as well?
I do. Actually, my next series after this one, you know, Lord willing, by the time I have book 4 out, you know, I will be at a point where my husband can quit, I can support the family with the books, and I can write full-time while he watches the kids. That's every author's dream. And if that comes to pass, I can turn out 2 books a year, in which case I can turn out my next series relatively quickly. My next series will be sci-fi. And there are 2 different versions. There's one sci-fi with a bit of fantasy, and there's one that's more of urban sci-fi.
So more, the urban sci-fi, is that more Robert Heinlein or more Leonard Nimoy or that thing? Robert Heinlein.
Yeah. Earth Invasion.
Yes.
Normal Day, Earth Invasion, yes. And that'll be a 3 or 4 book series.
So it's kind of like a, because he's written so many good books. Like Starship Troopers is a great one.
Yes.
Not so much as a movie. But so
I enjoyed
really
the movie well
book.
Enough.
I think it misinterpreted some of his philosophies quite a bit.
Yes, it'll be, what's a good one? More like, what is it? The 4th of July? No, what is that one with, I'm quoting movies, not books. What is the one with the guy? I'm sorry, it's been a long con.
Is it a? Does this have aliens in it?
Yes.
Okay. Is it Independence Day?
Independence Day, okay. 4th of July, Independence Day. You know, one of those holidays. You know.
Yeah, there's some pretty good ones for that, like Battlefield LA just came out recently.
And Battlefield Earth.
You don't want to be Battlefield Earth.
No, but Battlefield LA did remind me strongly of the dreams I've already had for these books. Like I said, most of my books are based on dreams, and I remember them for, you know, ever. So I've had this wonderful set of dreams about this alien invasion, and I just can't wait to write it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so that'll be my next set.
So do you keep a dream log? Or like, oh, such and such idea here?
No, like I said, that photographic dream thing going on. I don't have to keep the log. They're all filed in my head. And all I have to do is sit there and concentrate for a minute, and boof, there they are.
So anything... I do want to ask a question about... since you've gone to some of these conventions and met a lot of different people, what are your thoughts on the recent disaster that happened in Japan?
You know, that is something that is a travesty that I'm sure will be talked about for many years to come, and even the full consequences will probably not be known for months. I know Liesl Wilkerson is still searching for friends and family of friends that are missing. And the densely populated area that it hit is just, it makes me kind of fearful for California. You know, what if this was our coast instead of theirs? It does bring a lot of sympathy for their culture. And I just pray that they recover swiftly. And that the world unites and aids them as we did India. I'm sure that we all feel for their loss and hope that it'll bring the world together for Japan as it did for other countries.
Now, I've noticed this a little bit in some of your answers. So, are you a person of faith?
Yeah, yes, I am actually. And the funny part about it is, my Christian religion rejects my books.
What?
Yeah, you know, I actually, before I started my charity, I was looking around for some Christian, you know, places to donate this book to. And with the amount of sorcery and the threat of romance, you know, they were going, yikes, I don't think we can take that.
But yet, one of the best little fantasy books like the, for example, the Space Trilogy or
Narnia.
The Narnia, yeah, those are from Christian authors, or
right.
Screwtape Letters or Frankie Peretti's Cooper Kid series.
Oh well, I'm skirting one of those lines they really like to stay away from. So there's many, many Christians out there who accept it and welcome it, but for most Christian institutions, they have to draw that line and stay well away. From what I'm doing,
but do you find that a little disappointing?
No, you know, I don't. I understand where they're coming from, and you know, they have their ways, and I have mine. As a matter of fact, one of my harsher critiques was somebody who was upset because I did put that part of myself into the book as well. The main character declares herself a Christian and refuses to kneel before a pagan god. You know, so that's a hard line. And this Christian character, I try and represent the true Christians out there. She's got a good heart. She wants to help people. But she's tempted by people who are not her husband. You know, and there's
so some she issues. It's like the spirit is it's like the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.
Yes.
A lot of Christians do find the path to be a bit hard to walk. Sometimes there is temptation and such.
Exactly.
And I think that by having her be tempted, and so even if she does give into that, but does feel regret for it later, so there is a good message in there at that point. Well, it might not be for the younger readers at that point, and certain people may be like, oh, I think that it should be given a chance for that, because people are not perfect. The entire basis of Christianity is the pursuit of God's perfection. We can't achieve it.
And that's you know, exactly, you know, how I wrote the book, is I wanted to show the truth behind the struggle and not just whitewash over it. You know, that there's that struggle inside of all of us. And I didn't want to give, you know, over attention to it, but I did want to give the honesty of it in the books. And unfortunately for Christians, that is something they're not comfortable exposing to light, a lot of them, especially the institutions. They want us not to admit to that openly in the light.
Because we are, it's like, I think it's come from, we've had many, many different people, like Jim Baker? Yes.
Yeah. He failed miserably, yes.
But just because somebody's stumbled or fallen, that doesn't mean that we can't get back up again with God's grace.
Yes, and that's one of my favorite examples is, I'm really failing on names. He did The Passion. Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
You know, he did that movie as a labor of love for God. So many miraculous things happened during that movie and during the making of the movie. I hope you're all familiar with you know, the lightning strikes that struck the main character, the fact that he could speak this language flawlessly that's supposed to be impossible to learn, that he's never tried to do before. That there was just so many things that happened on this project that showed that God was behind it. Yet Mel Gibson is not a perfect man.
No, he's not like Charlie Sheen or David Hasselhoff in some of these regards. But he does have some temper problems that he does need some help with.
And he did have that DUI or something like that, you know. And they always bring out, you know, oh, the big Christian, you know, is now fallen, you know. And I'm like, yeah, but God still used him. You know, that's the amazing part, is that even though he was not perfect. God used him mightily in that, I believe, in that film that touched millions of people.
Do you think that, like if you've seen Shadowlands or read the book called Shadowlands on C.S. Lewis.
Yes, I have.
Do you feel that there is kind of if people want to know a little bit more, since you are doing science fiction next, or so, and there other books are, the other books that are coming will have newer characters, do you think you'll be able to put a little bit more into that for that? So that if people, like, put a little bit of undertones into it so that people will look toward that and ask you a bit more about it.
I'm hoping.
You'll be able to do that?
I actually have that planned, and I'm really hoping that that is the case, and that it is a great way to delve into this topic that is taboo. And you know, sorcery and religion have never mixed very well. Potter has taken flack from both sides. There are supporters and there are naysayers. You know, there's those who ban Potter from their churches, and there are those who welcome it.
And then they look at the same with say Twilight, where it's surprisingly conservative in its views on romance.
Right.
But a lot of people look at the vampires and werewolves and dismiss that, or with the Chronicles of Narnia or J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, where they are swords and sorcery, but there are underlining themes to them, because C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien were friends. C.S. Lewis wrote his books as a apologetics for children,
right?
Essentially,
exactly. And
I mean, we can't all be talking vegetables.
Exactly, exactly. So I do hope that it leads, but something that I intended never to bring to the public light. Thank you so much for being so keen.
Oh, that's
on this,
no problem.
Because it was actually something I hoped wouldn't be brought out, because I was kind of fearful of the fire I would take from the religious community once they knew, you know.
Well, the matter is, you do have a lot of friends in this industry and here at these conventions, and the more people who do read your books will understand that. You see, sometimes you have to take a bit of I guess the best way to look at it is, let's say you're polishing or sharpening a sword. You need heat in order to properly temper a sword.
Well, I'm ready for the heat. You can bring it on. But like I said, I had hoped to wait until it was book 3 or 4, because the themes will get heated as it continues, and her behaviors reap their consequences continually. So it's like ripples in a pond. They're barely felt in book 2, just a foreshadowing of 3, 4, and 5.
So if you enjoyed the first 2 books, it's going to just get better from there. The roller coaster is pulling up, and you're not at the at the at the at the at the at the peak yet.
Yeah, book three is halfway done. I have sent it out to a couple of first readers, and they tell me, oh my gosh, you know, hold on to your seats, that book three takes you so fast and so hard into this that it's pretty startling to them. They are in love with that. So, but they haven't even got to the good parts yet.
Not yet.
No, not yet. No, not the first half. Good stuff happens in the second half. So, you know, I was actually very fearful of coming out as a Christian because of the judgmental side of Christianity that we see so often.
And then even on the even in the fantasy world, fantasy thing. So you see a lot of fantasy and science fiction takes a kind of a cynical view on God. Christianity and God.
I've had many I actually had a bad review. I think I mentioned this or started to mention it earlier. I had a bad review, and one of the hardest ones for me to take was I don't like God mixed in with my fantasy. I'm a Christian, but keep it away from my books. You know, and so there are many
people.
There
will always be a few.
Yeah.
It's the internet. It's reviews.
And it's such a minor thing. Her Christianity, kind of like mine, you know, it comes out subtly, and it's not really overplayed. There is no big discussions. You know, there's no bold statements. It's just a part of who she is, as a person.
So we've gone through a lot of stuff here. A little bit more than you were thinking.
Tons more. Oh my gosh, you are the man of the interview hour. I tell you what, a good preparation for the future, I'm sure, if you were able to pick it up on it.
Well, sure, if you're talking with people from like AP or so, probably not too bad. I mean, I don't throw too many softballs.
Yeah, well, I thank you for giving me the heads up and helping me bring the side out, which I
You shouldn't be afraid to bring it out.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
Because, like, well, sort of like, I guess to go back to the armor of God analogy, the sword of truth does nothing if it's sheathed.
That's true. I was hoping people would read the book first, though, before they discovered, you know.
Well, when we do put this up, we will link to the site and to your site and stuff, and hopefully, right. Hopefully, it'll also inspire some of our readers to seek out the books, because there is a hunger for fiction and for fantasy fiction in particular, mm-hmm. that does reflect. Some Christian views and such. There is a hunger for that.
I had
no idea. It's just a little harder to appease because there are a lot of really good Christian fictions that come out, mm-hmm. but they're not as prevalent, especially in the fantasy genre. Like you said, it's a bit of a sticky wicket.
Yeah, I have been basically banned from all the Christian publishers because of the romance. And between that and the sorcery, there's like no way.
Yet, Love's Enduring Promise and Tilly are out there.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So do not be scared away by our talk of Christianity and God. Hopefully you will take a look at the book and realize she is human like one of us.
Yes. We're not going for the whole Joan Osborne approach, though.
No, not at all. So any other questions?
Well, for right now, I think we've gone through a lot of these. So You really liked Wasabi Con, right?
I absolutely loved Wasabi. Oh my gosh. You know, it was the most beautiful experience. I have met so many wonderful people. They are, like I said, they're accepting. I did come out for the first time as a Christian at a con. I've been to science fiction and fantasy, and usually I keep that pretty close to the chest, you know. I swear there are more atheists in the science fiction and fantasy cons than any place else. I go there and I dress as a sorceress, and more often than not, I'm asked, ooh, are you a pagan? What god do you worship? Yeah, yeah.
You're like, well, not Magog or any of that.
Yeah, I worship the god of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Ring any bells?
Like, oh, Jacob, in your relation to Edward.
Yeah. Yes, and very good. And yes, this was the first time in a con, and the acceptance, like you said, was there. You know, they took me for who I was, and that was just a part of me. And no one seemed offended, and it really touched my heart. You know, I don't know if you know Worky T. Chocobo.
No.
Yeah, he's hardcore
yeah.
Mormon.
Interviewed him.
He's hardcore Mormon. And we are really good friends. He's a Christian, I'm a Christian. We are brothers with God. And I learned from him that you can be true to who you are, and it's all accepted in anime. And Wasabi has a shining bright, is a light shining brightly to this fact. I was accepted fully for who I was at this convention, and just as every other person, I have accepted who they are. And like I said, I could not have asked for a better weekend. I just am sorry it ended so soon.
It happens. These do have a tendency to end. That happens, but there's always next year and years after that. And I want to thank you for being candid in your interview and such. And I want to thank you for the interview. This has been Philip Wesley from Radio DMG and
Lynn Hardy,
the author and writer of Prophecy of the Flame, Book 1 and Book 2, which are available on our website, which is
lynnhardy.com, and also at amazon.com.
So check those out, and definitely support her. And if you like fantasy, do check these out. There's an audiobook version coming if you're one of those people who doesn't have the time to go pick up some books, or if you've got a Kindle, it's also available for that.
Thank you so much. This has been
no problem.
Awesome interview.
Mm-hmm. And good night.
Good night.
And that's how the interview went down. Hold on a second. Sorry. I know. You're not really supposed to drink anything on air. But, that was the interview. I hope you enjoyed it. I've been nursing this sore throat cold thingy with some water, some honey and lemon. Actually, a pretty funny little story. I discovered that the honey and lemon, I added some lemon to some honey, shook it up a bit, and I have a whole container of it downstairs. But I was looking at that, and I realized it's not actually honey. It was a honey-flavored syrup in a bear. And I looked at the side and it said, first ingredient, sugar, high fructose corn syrup, honey. And then right under it, a disclaimer that said, do not feed to infants, product may contain honey. So, apparently, what type of world do we live in where we have to put a disclaimer on honey to tell people that it might contain honey? Yeah, just silliness, I suppose. So, next episode will be 100% newsity. And then what we did is we're going to go ahead and we were going to do 4 shows for Anime Land Wasabi, but it's gotten quite a bit away from the actual show. So what we'll do is, before Anime Land Wasabi, we'll have a discussion of last year's one before next year's one. That's kind of what we'll do before Akon as well. And what we expect to see, that type of deal. We're also, this weekend, because it is April 15th this weekend, and if you're in the United States, you have, I guess, to send in your taxes or so. And this weekend, Atlas Shrugged Part 1 is finally coming to theaters, as well as the animated film Rio. So we'll probably catch those and give you our opinions of them on the next Radio DMG show, as well as some more impressions of things we picked up and all that. We'll have some interesting discussions. So look forward to the next episode of Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley. The mile high mouth, or so. Being a mile up doesn't help when you've got a cold, or a sore throat, or whatever it is that's infected me. But yes, I caught a random blue virus, that's what happened. So, yes, look forward to the next episode. I'm your host, Philip Wesley. Thank you for listening to Radio DMG, and good night.
vanilla. Add a little more and you count to four and you never